Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Read with Michelle Martin.
It's his new novel and his 25th book. You may remember him as the gifted editor who's lent his touch to so many award-winning books in Singapore. The latest that he edited that I read and really enjoyed was Cyril Wong's The Other Side of Heaven. But here's Jason Eric Lundberg back with a book of his own that took 15 years to put together. He's joining me live now to share more of A Fickle and Restless Weapon. First up, congratulations on your book, Jason.
Thank you very much, Michelle. Thank you for having me on today. I always enjoy having discussions with you about books.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, so first up, the book is about three friends that get involved in a resistance group and they're battling a surveillance state. Help our listeners understand the forces that they're up against.
Yeah, so this takes place in kind of an alternate world. So it takes place in a country called Tin Hau, which is the same setting as my previous book, my novella, Diary of One Who Disappeared. And it's about these three friends that have various types of abilities, superhuman abilities. They're called Swees, and they're artists of different kinds as well. So one is a puppeteer, one is a dramatist, one is a graphic artist, and they kind of come together. It's a story about them and about kind of the political kind of rumblings of this country as you find out kind of what's going on in terms of surveillance and in terms of kind of how the government of this country is actually controlling things.
So let's enter this new world that you've created, this universe. Let's talk about the new races that you've created, for example. Is there a character who's part antelope?
Yes. So she actually opens up the novel. So we see the prelude of the novel from her point of view. And so it's not that she's a new race per se, but it's that she is one of these people, one of these Swees. That have they're superpowered people, basically. It's kind of my version of like the X-Men, like mutants, that kind of thing. Mm. So there is a certain mutation in terms of how that goes, and hers has expressed itself in making her look a little bit more like an antelope. Not completely, but you know, her features are elongated and she has those little antler stubs kind of on the top of her head and things like that. So you see her, the book opens with her, and then we don't see her again until a little bit later in the book.
I wonder if you can share a little bit, being a writer in this genre of speculative fiction, how you deal with this idea of overexposition. You know, Margaret Atwood famously said, you don't want to be describing the garbage disposal unit, but you're taking us into this new world of Swees and, you know, superhuman characters. So how do you manage the challenge of overexposition?
It's a fine line to walk. Is something that is really any writer who's working in this genre has to worry about, and honestly, any writer period has to worry about this idea of exposition and explaining too much to the reader, because you want the story to flow along naturally. You want it to be a smooth narrative. You want the reader to get caught up in the story, and you don't want to bog them down in details. And so, usually, it's about providing the telling details, like the right detail for that moment. Mm. And not worrying about everything right away, but just giving the reader enough so that they know what's going on, they know where they are, they know what everybody kind of looks like, but not providing too much information because that can overload you. You don't need all that stuff all at once. So you can parcel it out throughout the text, but it's kind of giving those details when they're needed. That I think is probably the best way to approach that.
So many things in this book are instantly recognizable for a Singaporean reader, I think. The use of Singlish or no eating durians on trains, for example. You refer to Tin Hau, which for those of us who've been to Hong Kong recognize that. Of course, you've decided to change the colloquial name of that area in terms of reference. Why did you decide to make the references in between your fictional world and ours so thinly veiled?
I think it was something where I had, because I started this book a very long time ago. As you say, it's been 15 years in the making. And so I started this around 2004. I did about a year of world building so I could actually put all the details of my kind of separate world here together. But a lot of it was based on my previous trips to Singapore. I'd only visited Singapore at that point once or twice. I can't remember if it was once or twice, but I was fascinated by Singapore. I grew up in the U.S. I lived there for a long, long time. And so coming to Singapore for the first time, it was actually my first time coming to Asia. And it was a very different culture than the one that I had grown up with. And I was fascinated just by the country and the culture and everything. And over the next few years, I started telling stories that would take place in Singapore. But then I wanted to tell something that was a bigger story, something that was a bit more epic, a bit more big, for lack of a better word. But I didn't feel like I could really talk about Singapore in that way yet, because I didn't know Singapore that well yet. And also, because I'm not Singaporean, I didn't feel like it was my place to do that either. There are plenty of Singaporean writers that are talking about Singapore and doing it brilliantly in their books. And so, so I didn't really feel like it was my place, but I wanted to include a Singaporean type country and culture and kind of makeup of people, and which includes food, which includes, as you said, Singlish. It's probably not called Singlish there, because Singlish comes from the word Singapore, and it's not called Singapore there. So,
do you coin a different word for it?
Sorry?
Do you coin a different word for it?
I don't really call it anything in the book, but it's just the colloquial way that people speak there. And so, I use a lot of these cultural details to kind of flesh out the setting of the book, because I was so fascinated with Singapore as a country.
As a Singaporean, though, when you read it, you understand sort of the ground rules of Singlish, when to use a la and when not to use a la. So how did you decide on the use of Singlish and when it was, you know, appropriate? And then for you, what is that line between appropriate and gratuitous use of Singlish?
Well, for one thing, I had a lot of help. So I have many friends that helped me out with that. And one in particular, Sherry, who helped me out at the very, very end, kind of as we were proofreading the text. And when it was after it had been laid out and typeset, and we were getting ready to send to the printer soon, she came in. She's a former colleague of mine, and she was able to help with some of that as well. But I had help along the way too. Mm. So part of it is I've been in Singapore for 13 years now, and part of it is just keeping my ear open for how people talk, and seeing how Singlish is used and how the phrases that people use and that kind of thing. And so, so it was partly that, but I have to say I had a lot of help with my Singaporean friends by getting those details correct, because the first time through I didn't really do that well. And so they're like, you might want to say it this way instead. So, so I have to thank my readers and friends for kind of steering me the right way.
Okay, that's terrific to hear. And readers are always interested in the ideation that goes into a novel. And I read, you told us that inspiration from this came not only from theories of 9/11 being an insider job, but inspiration that was as varied as a major arcana of a tarot deck by Rachel Pollack. How does that feed into the process?
Yeah, well, this was a tarot deck that was created by Vertigo Comics, which was it's not around anymore. It was around for a long time. It was an imprint of DC Comics. As for their more quote-unquote grown-up comics, so things like The Sandman and Swamp Thing and those books that were for mature readers. And so, and I was a big fan of The Sandman. I love Neil Gaiman's work.
Me too.
And on each cover of The Sandman, each issue was done by Dave McKeon, who's a brilliant British artist. And so at one point, the Vertigo people decided to put this tarot deck together, and they asked him to illustrate all of the cards. And so it's an incredibly beautiful collection. And because I was a big fan of his, I decided to get the deck because I just wanted the artwork. I wasn't as concerned with the tarot. But when I was reading, it comes with an accompanying booklet. And in that booklet, it's actually it contains a story, basically a story, kind of a structure for how to look at the major arcana of the tarot deck, which is the 20 cards, maybe the first 20 cards in the deck. That's the cards like the Fool and Death and those things that are more you associate more with like tarot readings. And so Rachel Pollack, who's a wonderful writer herself, and an expert in tarot, she basically came up with the structure of how to look at each card kind of one in a row. And I looked at that and I went, well, I can actually use some of this structure for the way I'm going to structure my book. And so that's how I started it. I actually took the way that she did that, starting with the Fool, the very first card, as my first point of view character, and constructed the beginning of the book that way. But along the way, I had to deviate from that because it didn't quite work with how I was trying to tell the story. So that's kind of, they started that way. I didn't quite continue it all the way because that would have been too constraining.
But that's fascinating. I've never heard of a book based on the tarot major Trump structure. Fascinating. So yeah. if we step back into one of the themes, which is surveillance, you started writing this book some 25 years ago. Was there a point, you know, in the writing where you come to realize that your imagination has sort of caught up with the real world where, you know, there are moments of almost prescience when it comes to predicting what technology can do with regards to surveillance and encroaching our personal space?
It's not so much that I felt like I was catching up, but it was more that things that were less known that you would find about on just like on tech blogs or kind of in that world start to become more mainstream. So as you say, it wasn't 25 years ago. It was like 15 years ago.
15 years, 25th book. Sorry.
I'm not that old, Michelle. So there was one thing where that it kind of, when I was starting this, there were writings about how people could, like hackers, could actually access the camera on your computer and disable the light so that they could actually monitor you on your own camera, on your laptop or on your desktop. And that was really frightening to me. That's why I always cover my camera now. And so I put that in the book, and it has actually gotten like major news coverage, this idea that you can be surveilled kind of against your will and not even know it. And so it's things like that where I try to, the book is kind of a combination between science fiction and fantasy, and more fantasies than science fiction, because I did discover kind of throughout my career, I've been writing for a couple decades now, and I discovered that when I was writing science fiction, trying to imagine the future, that it kept coming faster and faster and faster. And so once I wrote something and it was published, it did feel like it was out of date already. And so I started moving toward the fantastic end because I don't have to worry about it in terms of the fantasy elements. And so there are some science fiction elements, but I tried to push them even further than I normally would because I didn't want to be outpaced by kind of the real world that we're living in.
Well, it's fascinating. The book is just behind you. I can see on screen, The Fickle and Restless Weapon. The cover art is amazing. I wish we had more time to get into it. But congratulations, Jason, and thank you for joining us on Read.
Thank you very much, Michelle.
Jason Eric Lundberg, the author of A Fickle and Restless Weapon.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.